Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. And thank you very much to Duduzile Ramela for standing in for me last week while I was away. I am back and it is good to be back. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the latest developments out of the team at Old Mutual Insure where it relates to SME and small businesses and the trust economy. We're going to speak to them about that and what they believe SMEs should be doing. We've also got a conversation taking a look at the potentially one of the first big cases of expropriation without compensation to hit the courts and what we can make of the implications or the potential implications of that case. Then we've got a conversation with the CEO of Signia, Magda Virziska, to take a look at the views around cryptocurrencies, why we shouldn't be going all in on Bitcoin just yet. And then we've got a conversation with the team at Momentum Wealth, taking a look at the drawdown rates of guaranteed annuities. We're going to take a look at that and see what we make of it. And then we're going to wrap up the show with our Digital Drive segment. We're going to be chatting to our tech and EV specialist, who's also the founder of recharged.co.za, Nafisa Akabor, around the latest EV that's been launched in South Africa by BYD, launched last week, and what we make of the BYD Dolphin Surf.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Before we get into the show, of course, there is always a weird law from around the world. This one comes to you courtesy of Utah, in the state of Utah in the United States. It is illegal to buy or sell alcohol during a declared emergency. I wonder what defines a declared emergency. I suppose that would then also mean that there would be absolutely no liquid courage in the event of a zombie apocalypse. That is what it is. I don't make the laws. I keep finding them for you, and I'll keep doing that as I can. But let's get into market movements throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by founder and managing partner at Herenia Capital Advisors, Pietri Redlinges, to take a look at market movements and see what we make of them. Marmalade, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Gold, new all-time highs. Nothing can stop it. I said a little earlier on the National Pulse with Ashraf Garda, I said potentially I could see $4,000 at this rate before the end of the year. How are you seeing the gold price?
Good evening. So firstly, thank you for having me, Jimmy. Nice that you're back. And this is a question that you're not the first person to ask me today. What is the target for the gold price? There's different ways that you can do it. You can use all sorts of fancy Fibonacci projections and forecasts and try to put a fundamental value on it. And the simple answer is this. If you're long gold, put a trailing stop loss on. We're in brand new territory. There's no resistance. You don't know how long is a piece of string, right? For now, what we know is fundamentally the market wants to be going up for a couple of reasons. There's a huge amount of uncertainty. We're cutting interest rates at all-time highs. Interestingly enough, long-term rates are going up in the U.S. after an interest rate cut. So we've got bonds and equities moving in the same direction. This is never really good news in the longer term. But for now, all we can say is that the market wants to go higher. Precious metals in general, platinum looks like it's breaking out as well. So enjoy the ride while it lasts, right? So the best way to really play this, obviously, is through the gold miners, because there's lots of gear in there, so they can really run very nicely. And we saw the Rand put in a nice reversal today as well. So that should be supportive of the gold miners. But essentially, you know, the strategy here is use I don't want to go too much jargon because I know some people might not understand what I'm talking about, but an average true range times two trailing stop loss. So essentially what you're doing is you're seeing that the gold price is sort of an average amount that it moves in a certain, you know, on any given day. And that amount is called the average true range. So right now that is around $47 a day. That it can move either up or down. So you would put that times two, so round that up, so say $100 stop loss, and every day as your gold price moves up, you move your stop loss up by that trailing amount of, say, $100, and that's how you make the most of it, right? So if the gold price goes to 4,000, you're in it all the way. If it goes to 3,800, which is around the corner, and it stops there, you know, you can sort of maximize your gains without really having to put a very hard target on it will go to exactly this level. because there are no levels. Essentially, what happens is we can give these target prices very easily when we have previous levels of support and resistance. But when we're trading at a space where it's never been before, we can only make forecasts and predictions using, you know, all sorts of different technical tools or fundamental analysis, but these things are generally inaccurate. So you just follow the trend, right?
As you're saying this, Pietri, I can't help but think of something you said on this particular show and many other shows that you and I have been on together is you shouldn't be trying to anticipate the market or trying to predict the market. Rather, let the market do what it needs to do and actually follow the market rather than try to lead the market. This is the exact example I can think of in that space. If you're in uncharted territory, then trying to predict the market is probably the worst thing you can do at this point. But you did mention the US picture, and I want to zoom in on that for a second. I'm looking at the dollar index. It bounced off of a 96 points level when we got that interest rate decision last week, that interest rate cut. That cut was all but priced in from a market perspective, but it hasn't really gained much more momentum beyond that. I'm looking at today's performance of the dollar index, and after kind of the tail end of last week, a positive close to the week from the dollar index, it doesn't seem to have started this week on the strongest of footing.
No, so, I mean, yeah, exactly. I just want to chime in a little bit of what you said earlier. Yes, our job is to follow, not predict, right? So if we look at, and I'm about to make a prediction. So essentially the trend of the dollar is down, right? So from what we can see, if we're trend followers, follow the cork, man. It's going down. But from now, the way that it looks like at the moment is that Trump administration will still do nothing to weaken the dollar. This is their primary objective, right? Make America great again. Weaken the dollar, make U.S. debt cheaper, bring jobs back, make it better for their economy in terms of trade balance and all the rest of the stuff. And for that, they need a weaker dollar. So that is great because that's going to push commodity prices, right? Which is fantastic for us. So yes, we'll see a stronger rand, but we'll also see stronger commodity prices. And if you look at the performance of our market locally over the last little while, it's basically the gold show, right? Gold miners are the reason our market is touching 100,000 almost, basically. So from that perspective, the way that we see it, at least here, is that at this stage, the same thing with gold, right? I'm not about to pick a level and stand in front of the bus and say, you will stop here, because the bus might not stop. Right? It can keep going. So for now, it looks like the dollar is going to continue to weaken. Dollar index will continue to come down, and that's going to be great for commodities, right? So that's trade at the moment.
Pietri, let's come back to local markets. Resource counters having a good day off the back of, as you said, stronger commodity prices, and that could likely be what we continue to experience, at least for the short term, with that weakening dollar there. But when we look at the rest of the market, it also isn't doing too badly. I'm looking at the all share above 105,000 points at this point, the top 40 approaching 100,000 points for the first time in its history as well. Clearly, our local market is still finding favor, even though markets globally might be a bit hesitant. And as I say that, I'm looking at global markets and I'm looking at the performances from sort of international markets. It does seem like we have had some of the markets performing in positive territory, some of them not in not so positive territory. But by and large, from a South African perspective, we're absolutely happy with the performance at the moment.
Yeah, so, I mean, we had a wobbly day, right? We had a little bit of time in the red. We also, if you look at the top 40 index, traded very, very strong at one point, the high of the day, sort of being 99.694, and the close being 98.704. So that's almost, 900 points. It was 500 points or so lower from the high, right? So it's quite a big range. So we had a very strong day, and it kind of pulled back. I think global markets really kind of having a bit of a wobbly start to the week, but generally, our markets probably do a little bit of a pullback. There's going to be a bit of discrepancy between markets here and there from time to time. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a couple of days of red. But overall, the trend is up. And I think, that's a product of a number of things. One, we're following the U.S. as we do. And two, we didn't cut rates last week. Most people expected and just saw a couple of really angry voices on Twitter about that. So the market's really kind of expecting, well, maybe a bigger rate cut next time around from the MPC locally. And then also, you know, there's a couple of things, and I think I've said this, we've spoken about this before on this and other shows. You know, we're doing a few things right. Government of national unity, still intact. I mean, every time I say that, I'm just as surprised as I was the first time I said that. And two, the lights are on, right? So a little bit of economic support, and the economy can actually get going. So if you look at stuff like some of the REITs reported earnings last week, you know, footfall through malls are basically the same, yet spending is up 5%. Revenues or turnover in shops is up something like 5%, the same amount of footfall. So lower interest rates is helping. People are spending more money. People are feeling more confident. Look at vehicle sales. They're picking up. Look at, you know, loans being taken out of the banks. Picking up. So generally, the economy is showing signs of improvement. And if you look at it from that perspective, and something, again, that we've spoken about in the past, our market has can literally double to make up the valuation gap between us and the U.S. over the last 10 years. So from a valuation perspective, in the emerging market basket that's available for international investors to invest in, if rates are super low in the U.S., markets are super confident, man, I need risk on. I can't get great returns in the U.S. sort of money markets. Where can I go? Emerging markets. Where can, you know, what's the best looking one? Sunny Sada. So I'm very bullish on our local market, actually.
Sunny South Africa, as we head into South African summer, perhaps the markets will be kind to us as we close out the year. At this point, the markets have done exceptionally well as it is, and that is where we're going to leave the conversation. Thanks so much to Pietri for those insights and for the time. Pietri Riedling is founder and managing partner at Hirenya Capital Advisors, joining us to take a look at market movements as well as potentially some market sentiment.
My love, everything's on track for our retirement, right?
I think we'll be fine.
You think?
Yep, I'm 100% certain. I think we'll be fine. Maybe, for sure, probably, but definitely, possibly, beyond a shadow of a doubt.
I think doesn't belong in a retirement plan. Momentum Wealth Annuities provide a guaranteed income so you can stop guessing and start knowing. Momentum Wealth Annuities, for financial decisions built on certainty. Ask your financial advisor today. Momentum Wealth is part of Momentum Metropolitan Life Limited, an authorized financial services and credit provider.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And in the world of uncertainty that we live in the world of financial markets that we live in, there are assets like cryptocurrencies that have become newly introduced assets into the financial services landscape. We've seen everything from ETFs being introduced in the United States to our own Signia asset management company in South Africa introducing an ETF from their perspective. We're going to take a look at the cryptocurrency landscape, because the chief executive officer at Signia Asset Management has quite a contrarian view around how we should be looking at Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency assets at the moment. And she joins me on the line now to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Of course, Magda Virziska, the CEO of Signia. Magda, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Always lovely to catch up. Cryptocurrencies came in, took the world by storm. We finally got them regulated. We finally got them into a space where asset managers such as Signia can be involved in these sorts of products. And now we're kind of going into a different phase around cryptos. Where do we find ourselves in terms of the investment case that is for cryptocurrencies?
That's a difficult one. We have seen cryptocurrencies, or at least Bitcoin, around for better part of a decade. And, you know, Bitcoin started as something that, you know, mostly software engineers speculated on. And then, you know, it spread into 20-year-old age group and trading. However, over the last decade, it really has become kind of a very volatile mainstream investment. Maybe I use that term mainly mainstream cautiously, because it was still very much and remains a retail investment product. So it's, you know, the people who invest are individuals rather than institutions. The latest boom, of course, in terms of Bitcoin's popularity has come from the Donald Trump's presidency, where the they have or they are planning to make Bitcoin a reserve currency, and hence the price has absolutely skyrocketed from $20,000 to over $100,000. So of course everyone now is, you know, interested in Bitcoin. But one cannot forget that it is a speculative asset. High volatility, no guarantee of returns. It is not linked to any economic conditions. It's not cyclical. And consequently, as much as, you know, it's an interesting investment, it should only ever form a small part of anyone's well-balanced, diversified investment strategy.
Mm. Now, Magda, for those that for some reason don't know of Signia and that don't know of the work that you've done in building that business, you haven't been afraid to venture into alternative asset classes, into newly formed asset classes. Take me through the thinking from an asset manager perspective around how you then view an asset class like this. You touched on the fact that it's speculative and the fact that it is not based on economic movements. How do you then start to look at it and say, as an asset manager, we handle funds on behalf of others as well, and we can't sit on the sidelines and say we don't want to get involved? Or perhaps we do sit on the sidelines and say we don't want to be part of the project or the product. How do asset managers start to view this going forward?
I think, as I said, you know, if you take it back a decade, it was a very speculative investment which belonged in the hands of 20-year-olds. I actually have looked at Bitcoin back in 2017. I came very close to launching the first Bitcoin ETF on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, and I was shut down 2 days before the listing. So I've been interested in that asset class for a long time now. In terms of an investment case, it really, you know, is actually premised on the same two things that you always hear: diversification and long-term returns. So Bitcoin, by not being correlated, or any other cryptocurrency, not being correlated to any other economic conditions, it's not correlated to what listed markets are doing. So, you know, if you introduce it into your portfolio, be it in a small percentage, I would never advocate anything above kind of 3 to 5%, then you are diversifying your portfolio away from traditional asset classes. And this, you know, has become a traditional asset class as we speak. And provided you hold something like that as a long-term investment and not as a speculative one, then there's every expectation that it will deliver attractive returns. But if what you are hoping to do is trade, then that's a very different proposition and a very different space. So as an asset manager, we would discourage any form of trading in cryptocurrencies, and rather view it as a diversifier and a long-term investment.
That's quite an interesting view to incorporate, particularly into, as you said, having a well-balanced portfolio. Magda, many of the Bitcoin pundits out there, those that are pro-cryptocurrencies and that might argue that any and all assets out there carry levels of risk and therefore this is no exception to that. What would you say from a concern perspective, from a warning perspective, that makes Bitcoin different perhaps to the traditional assets? I mean, we've spoken about these sorts of things in prior conversations. We've spoken about things like companies that have really good balance sheets, that have really good, strong fundamentals. Are there fundamentals in the cryptocurrency landscape that make for a business case or even an investment case?
I mean, it's a very interesting question, because Bitcoin itself is actually, you know, it's not underpinned by anything, but it has become a currency in itself. So it's a form of payment. You know, think of it as money. That is its greatest application. That vendors, not in South Africa, overseas, accept Bitcoin as a form of payment. So there is that element to Bitcoin. Of course, it isn't underpinned by reserves, so it can fluctuate a lot more than any other currency. So it's, you know, does it have any value in itself? Yes, it's a very volatile payment currency. Is it, as I said, underpinned by any fundamentals? No. But arguably, if you look at gold, Gold also struggles to have any fundamentals other than being a store of value because, you know, it's kind of the share prices, the price is relatively stable. But does it have any utility value in itself? Probably not, other than jewelry. So really, I would view it as, you know, the only underpin to it is it's a tradable currency.
Magda, given the comparison with gold as an example, some people have often said that Bitcoin and many other cryptocurrencies could potentially replace gold. Is that a view that you agree with?
No. I think, you know, Bitcoin is compared and has been compared to gold in the terms of its liquid gold. But if you look at, I mean, you know, in many cases, the gold has a very regulated form, believe it or not, of how it is actually physically traded. Bitcoin doesn't. The world of crypto belongs, as much as there's some regulation, it's still a highly unregulated world. So, you know, I would view Bitcoin, well, it is a much more speculative investment than gold would be. But it's compared to gold because of the utility value it has done, except for as being payment currency.
There you have it, folks. Don't put your life savings into Bitcoin. Don't listen to me. Listen to the CEO of the asset manager currently controlling more than 400 billion rands of assets under management in the form of Signia Asset Management. Thank you so much to Magda for those insights and for the time. Always lovely having you on the show. Magda Wierzyska, Chief Executive Officer of Signia Asset Management, joining us to take a look at Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and where they should fit into a portfolio.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
In a world where a lot can change in 6 years, you can rest assured that Hino's 6-year drivetrain warranty won't. All Hino trucks now come standard with a 6-year drivetrain warranty, protecting your investment all the way from pistons to gears. Built to keep your business moving, supporting uptime, growth, and daily operations. Because although a lot can change in 6 years, our warranty promise won't. Terms and conditions apply. Hino all the way.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM. This interview is brought to you by Old Mutual Insure. Protect what built you.
One of the most important things in business is arguably trust, and that's trust between the business service provider, the business's customers, the business's referrals, and all manner of relationships in between. It's very difficult to build a business without trust. And we're going to be looking at this, and we're going to be taking a look at the importance of this in the context of a small businesses. I'm joined on the line by the executive for alternative channel solutions at Old Mutual Insure, Sean Vandenberg. Sean, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on the show. What do we mean by trust? And more specifically, if we have to refer to something like a trust economy, what would that even look like for small businesses?
So, Jimmy, it's quite simple. In small businesses, trust is your word, right? So trust is built over years, but can be lost in seconds. So that's the commodity small business trades. So for SMEs, it's the cornerstone of their survival and sustainability and growth. If they're not there for their clients, that trust is lost, and so is the business. So just as the SMEs are always there for their clients, so should we also be as Old Mutual Insure, and we're committed to be there at every step of the growth of such a business.
Now, Sean, for some businesses, it can be a bit difficult to be there for their clients because the reality is businesses face many risks, everything from load shedding to perhaps receiving late payments from suppliers that they are supplied by. These sorts of things can cause unintended disruptions for businesses, and that can damage the element of trust that businesses have with their clients. Let's go through some of these risks and take a look at perhaps how businesses can plan for them and how businesses can just be better prepared for the risks.
Yeah, so Jimmy, it's quite important for a SME to walk a journey with a broker. So the risks are often hidden in plain sight. You often don't know what they are. Things like load shedding is unpredictable. One day you're on stage six, One day there's no load shedding, all of a sudden it happens. What does that mean? You know, there's perishables that can go off, there are power surges that can happen, anything from electrical short circuit to your appliances or electrical equipment, or it's just some of the consumables, stocks, things like that, that go off. So it's very important that you don't almost underestimate some of the risks that you can have as a SME, because one loss can cause your business to either close down or suffer serious losses over a period of time.
Sean, you mentioned a broker. What do you mean by a broker, and what is the role of the broker then for a small business? If I'm a small business out there and I need to find a broker, how do I even go about the process, and what should I be looking for in a broker?
Okay, well, the first point is many SMEs don't have large finance teams, which is why a broker plays a crucial role. It's a cornerstone of your business. It's the broker is part of your business. It walks the journey with your business and should be seen as a trusted advisor to help you with real world needs and look at some of the things that you need covered, like a theft cover, goods in transit, or business interruptions. In order to find a broker, you know, ask a friend or someone around you in the area that has a well-known broker that assists you. But for convenience sake, you can go to Old Mutual Insurance website and you can find a broker that's close to your area to assist you. But the most important thing is to get a broker who can take the journey with you and show you some of these risks that you might miss around your business.
Sean, let's wrap up the conversation by taking a look at some of the protection measures you can put in place, some of the safeguards as a small business that you and your broker can put in place for the business. I know there's lots of business insurance products out there, and it's difficult to kind of find products that align with the business that you're in. But let's look at some of the basic products that most businesses would be able to put in from an insurance perspective, and how these products can better protect small businesses.
Jimmy, the easiest thing to actually think about when you think of insurance is, where would you need insurance at any given time in your business? Something like roadside assistance, it's often forgotten. If your vehicle is stranded next to the road, you know, do you have the time, do you have the means to get that vehicle back on track, back to wherever it needs to be, to a service provider? Something like SwiftCare, which is the roadside assistance, can assist your business to get up and running as quick as possible. But there are other options like business interruption that also helps your business in terms of continuity. So if something happens to your business and the business can't continue, we bring in cover that covers that financial loss. Or often we would give you extra financial means to get whatever you need in that specific time just to get going again. So those type of things are things that you can often get as insurance companies. But don't forget the normal things like theft and fire protection. That is a standard insurance cover that any business would need in any unfortunate event. Yeah.
The foundation of every good business is a trust, and maintaining that trust requires you to make some really important decisions where it relates to your business. Some of those important decisions include speaking to a broker, speaking to a financial services provider that can help you better protect your business so that your business can better protect others out there. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to Sean for those insights and for the time. That is the Executive for Alternative Channel Solutions at Old Mutual Insure, Sean Vandenberg, joining us to take a look at the importance of trust and how to build a small business in today's trust economy.
This interview is brought to you by Old Mutual Insure. Protect what built you.
So you thought you were building a business in this economy, but day by day, somehow it grew. You kept going when the freezer didn't freeze, the bucket didn't budge, and the bank balance barely blinked. So you thought you were building a business. You weren't. It was building you. Because this isn't just what you do anymore. It's who you are, and you don't trust just anybody to protect it. Chat to your broker about Old Mutual Insure Business Insurance. Protect what built you. Old Mutual Insure Limited is a licensed FSP and non-life insurer.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
One of South Africa's first expropriation without compensation cases is finally heading to court. This is a case that dates back to 2018, in which the government expropriated a 34-hectare property as part of a housing project that they were looking to implement. We're going to take a look at what this all means, what the court application is all about, and where we go to from here. I'm joined on the line by Piet le Roux, the CEO of Sakalicha, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Piet, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on the show. How did we get here? Give us a summary of what happened back in 2018 and how we got to where we are in 2025.
In 2018, the City Council of Ekurhuleni resolved to expropriate without compensation to enable there to be test cases, because they wanted to pay zero compensation. They wanted to prove or argue that the Expropriation Act that was then in place of 1975, the old Expropriation Act, could be set aside and that public interest was enough to secure zero compensation. Then they resolved at the end of 2018 to do that. In the course of 2019, they expropriated the compensation, and after much ado, formally offered the owners 0 rand and 0 cents.
So, Piet, where we stand now, what is being brought forward to the courts at this point?
Well, the case before the courts now is not the expropriation. The company that was expropriated accepted that. They said if the municipality wants it, if it's necessary and if it's justified, then they can have that. They won't argue against the expropriation, but they want market-related compensation. And the municipality, they didn't just say, well, we're going to discount that by this much, or maybe this is what it's really worth. They just said from the beginning, we're not going to offer you any compensation. And after back and forth of negotiations, you know, businesses try and stay out of the news, so they try to resolve this amicably. But where we are today is this: the court has now ordered mediation at the end of October, and thereafter an 18-day trial February next year. And that will be very important, because if the Ekurhuleni municipality can get away with stealing money, that is taking something and not giving people anything back, then I'm afraid that might open the sluices for any other state entity to try and do the same.
Piet, let's look into that in a bit more detail. I mean, if we are referring to the Expropriation Act of 2024, we know that this has been a hot topic in the media. This has been a topic that has gone as far as Washington, with various countries weighing in on some of these expropriation policies. What does this case mean for that? What does this mean for the precedent that could potentially be set here?
Yes, if the precedent is set that it is acceptable to confiscate land without compensation, then there will be firstly a ripple effect right through the economy. Every piece of land in this country that is has a similar profile, has a similar risk of a state entity saying it's in the public interest to take it and therefore the compensation will be zero, that will have to be restated on the books. And so you'll see valuations of companies dropping. And that's not just the owners, the direct owners. You must remember, people's savings are invested in this, pension funds are invested in this. This will be felt by everybody in South Africa as the economy declines and as asset values decline. Secondly, there'll be a political implication, because allowing expropriation without compensation will cause the country to be destabilized. So we will see international mobilization against that. There are enough examples just across our border from states who've tried the same. And then there will be the social implications. If the city of Ekurhuleni can get away with this, other state entities will do the same. But we must also remember that illegal land invasions are already a scourge. And so if the state entity can take property without compensation, why not let anybody illegally settle land? And so we will see both state land and private land at higher risk of illegal land invasions. It's really a situation that must be overturned. We cannot accept this no decision, no compensation decision to stand.
As you mentioned, the valuations of the land, I can't help but wonder about companies like real estate investment trusts on the JSE that would ordinarily have some of their assets tied in land, and what that would mean for them. Piet, before I let you go, I want to take a look at the valuation, particularly of the piece of land in question here, and what's brought about this particular court case. Is there some form of guidance from the Expropriation Act, perhaps, or even from other legislation around how we do value the land in the event that that land is going to be expropriated? And should perhaps that be part of the conversation to say, if there is an agreeable value on this particular piece of land, then whether we're expropriating or not, that is the amount that should then be paid. Is that part of what you're going to be looking at as well from a case perspective?
Yes, from Saklicha's side, we won't be involved in this case, though we are monitoring it. The current case is being driven by the owners. They're trying to secure compensation. We will involve the particulars of this case in our upcoming litigation against the new Expropriation Act of 2024 that President Ramaphosa sent it to earlier this year, because this new Expropriation Act will make fighting these cases even more difficult. This expropriation that we're talking about now happened under the old act, and under that act, market value must be assessed and should form the basis for evaluation. Now, the Boksburg, the Ekurhuleni City Council, they had this property on their own valuation rolls for 27 million rand, and they assessed the company for rates and taxes based on that number. Now they're certainly suddenly ignoring that valuation and saying that that is not in play. The company, the owners, have found independent valuations that range from 30 to 64 million. They're saying, well, there are settled ways to address this, as long as we're happy for the court to find a market value, and that is what they're currently looking for. So it's not a novel thing to find what a property is valued. There are all sorts of ways to do this, and there are established ways. I think what is important here is to understand is that the city is ignoring all the established ways all around the world dealing with questions like this. They just decided beforehand it'll be zero. That's not acceptable.
And we'll leave it on that particularly interesting note, because as far as we all know, as residents of whichever municipality you're a resident of, there is a market value attached to your property, and that is what your rates and taxes are based on. We'll keep an eye on the story. We'll see how the story continues to unfold. But for now, thank you so much to the Chief Executive Officer of Saklicha, Piet Leroux, for joining us to take a look at one of the first cases to potentially go all the way through to the courts in relation to expropriation without compensation.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't, because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by Momentum Wealth. So last week, alongside the Momentum Wealth results that came out, Dudu Ramela caught up with Ferreira Adam, the CEO of Structured Products and Annuities at Momentum Wealth, taking a look at the drawdown rates for guaranteed annuities. As you know, we've been going through a series with the team at Momentum Wealth around guaranteed annuities. Let's listen in on how this conversation went.
So financial security during retirement affords you more than spending power. It affords you peace of mind. Literature suggests that the world over, people are living longer and the possibility of outliving your savings is real. And be that as it may, it is possible to have some sense of control and certainty in the income you will receive in retirement. Faria Adam is CEO of Structured Products and Annuities at Momentum Wealth. She joins us now to look at your options in generating income during retirement. Thank you so much, Faria, for your time this evening. Maybe let's start with a piece of information from the Association for Savings and Investment South Africa, that's ASISA. They have a report on living annuity drawdowns. What are some of the key insights that you perhaps took away from the report?
So ASISA recently released the latest industry statistics, and this shows that living annuity policyholders withdrew on average 5.6% of their capital as income in 2024. This is important because it's 1 percentage point lower than what we've seen in recent years, which is very positive. Now, one of the main drivers of this has been the strong investment performance in 2024, which resulted in good growth of asset values. There's a generally accepted view that a drawdown rate of between 4% and 5% in the first decade of retirement is considered prudent. The numbers show from a CISA that about 36% of assets fall in the less than 5% income bracket, but we still see that more than 40% of assets are exposed to drawdowns of more than 7.5%. So there are still many clients who are at risk of running out of money during their lifetime.
So if 5% is prudent, how long should you then plan for retirement?
So we've talked about this previously, but I want to highlight it again. At Momentum Wealth, our experience shows that females tend to live longer than males. So females should plan for a longer retirement period. To put it in context, if we have a group of 160 year old females, almost 50 of them are likely to reach the age of 90, and 30 of them are likely to reach the age of 95. So if you are a 60-year-old female retiring now, it's not inconceivable that you will need your retirement savings to last for 30 years. For men, it's a little bit lower, but we still see a 35% chance of 60-year-olds reaching age 90.
So what if you need more than the 5% then?
I think let's start with a little bit of an example, right? And to make the numbers simple, we'll assume 5 million invested into a living annuity with a 5% drawdown rate. And let's say that inflation is 5%, because you need to ensure that your future income keeps pace with inflation. So what does this mean? For that client, it means that he will receive 20,000 rand a month before tax. In market-linked assets, you're likely to be able to receive the full income you need till age 80. But it's very unlikely that you will be able to receive the same level of real income from age 80 to age 90. But if you were to invest a portion of this living annuity into a guaranteed life annuity, then you remove the risk of running out of money completely, and you will likely receive the full income that you need, even if you live past age 90.
Because then that raises... Please finish your thought.
Yeah. I wanted to just say that, remember the 40% that we mentioned, that are actually drawing down more than 7.5%. Mm-hmm. So let's say what you needed from your 5 million rand investment is actually an income of 30,000 before tax, which is quite conceivable. That's a drawdown rate of just over 7%. In this case, the projections show that a client is likely to only be able to receive the full income they need for 10 years. So that's to age 70, which is quite a short period of time. And after that, there's likely to be a shortfall. Now, this is typically someone who could benefit from a life annuity, which can actually provide you with what you need in real terms without any risk of running out of money. So that's why the level of drawdown is such an important indicator of the level of risk and therefore the type of product that will be suitable for a retiree.
Because when you speak of women living, right up to the age of 90 and the factors that you've just... 91. And the factors that you've just explained, you know, a thought comes to mind, what are the chances that the income will last, more so when you speak of maybe when you look at somebody who's 70, there being a shortfall. How then do you cover that gap?
So there are new generation products. So in the past, you could choose between a life annuity and a living annuity. Living annuity, where you take all the risk. Life annuity, where you actually pass on the risk. But the new products at Momentum Wealth, for example, is what we call hybrid annuities. And these allow you to blend the features of a life annuity and a living annuity. And you can make these decisions even when you reach the age of 70. Mm-hmm. Anytime during your retirement journey, at any age where you start to be concerned that you will have a shortfall, you can take action and actually move some of that money into a life annuity and actually limit the risk that you are taking in that way. Of course, each client's context is different.
Yeah.
So we really advise our clients who are in retirement or even nearing retirement to speak to the advisor specifically about sustainability of future income and how well it's likely to keep up with inflation. And then again, how life annuities can help to remove risk and increase certainty.
Yeah, I think when you speak of a financial advisor, my colleague Simon Brown always looks at a financial advisor or financial planner as your psychologist. The importance of having a certified financial planner guide you for that context that you speak of. How important is that?
absolutely important. So we realize more and more that during retirement, because there are so many factors that are influencing these decisions, and your context matters, and you're actually at an age where you have limited choices. So a financial advisor is actually your guide on that journey, not only from the perspective of financial planning, really, and decision making, but also behavioral aspects. Like, what is the impact of what you do at those ages? What will happen if you increase your drawdown rate? What will happen if you reduce your drawdown rate? Yeah. When is the right time to move into a life annuity or a living annuity? Retirement is quite complex, and we see that the role of the advisor during that journey is becoming more and more critical.
Thank you very much, Faria, for your time this evening. Faria Adam is CEO of Structured Products and Annuities at Momentum Wealth.
This interview was brought to you by Momentum Wealth. Momentum Wealth guaranteed annuities offer you personalized certainty.
My love, everything's on track for our retirement, right?
I think we'll be fine.
You think?
Yep, I'm 100% certain. I think we'll be fine. Maybe, for sure, probably, but definitely, possibly, beyond a shadow of a doubt.
I think doesn't belong in a retirement plan. Momentum Wealth Annuities provide a guaranteed income so you can stop guessing and start knowing. Momentum Wealth Annuities, for financial decisions built on certainty. Ask your financial advisor today. Momentum Wealth is part of Momentum Metropolitan Life Limited, an authorized financial services and credit provider.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's Digital Drive Time on a Monday, and we are getting an update from the world of EVs. We have been keeping an eye on this world through our resident tech and EV specialist, Nafisa Akabor, the founder of Recharged.co.za. She's got some interesting updates coming out of the team at BYD, and she joins us on the line now to take a look at these updates and see what we make of them. Nafisa, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. You and I caught up last time about what was happening in China, and that was a tech conversation. But I know that when we were both in China, when we've both been traveling, we've seen the increase of a company like BYD in terms of footprint, and they seem to be very deliberate about what's coming into the South African market. I noticed they've launched a new model as recently as last week. Tell us about that.
Hey, Jimmy, good to be back. Yeah, BYD is I think they're number one globally market share-wise, so we will be seeing a lot of them. But very interestingly and very excitingly, they launched the Dolphin Surf in South Africa. Now, this is significant because the starting price of this electric car is 340,000 Rand, and it comes with 232 kilometers of range on that base model, and there's a higher dynamic range with 295 kilometers of range, and that starts at 390,000 Rand. So for the first time, we're now seeing EVs that are under the 400K mark, and I think it makes such a difference for those who've always been wanting to buy an EV to save money because, of course, the fuel cost, it's been proven over and over again, the price per kilometer is a lot cheaper on an EV than a petrol car. And this price point, I've been getting queries once I posted about it on Recharged from a lot of people who I would never have thought would buy an EV. They're now saying that the price is so attractive, they're considering an electric car. So someone in the family has purchased one. My sister is considering buying one. It just goes to show that we have been waiting for a cheap EV to switch to it. And of course, the benefits are going to be that you don't have to worry about the rising fuel costs.
Nafisa, when we look at this, I mean, 330,000 Rand seems like a very affordable entry-level EV. How does it stack up against other EVs in that price range and in almost the drive range? You and I have spoken about this in the past as well, around some range anxiety that people have had in the past. Is this a vehicle that kind of addresses all of that? Is it more of a in-city drive?
Yeah, it's more a city car drive, and at the price point, it's a commuter EV. You're not buying it to do long road trips or go out of the province. That's a bit obvious. But for its price point, and if you look at other EVs like the GWM Aura and the Mini, they are obviously more pricier compared to this. But like the previous gen Mini, for example, will give you sort of the same kilometer range. So the BYD comparatively makes more sense if you are trying to save money.
Nafisa, from BYD's perspective, is this the end of what they're looking to launch into South Africa? I mean, we know prior to this, they recently launched the Shark, and that has been doing well as a pickup or as a bucky, is what we'd refer to it in South Africa. Now with the Dolphin Surf, has there been any indication from the team at BYD that we could be getting other models into the South African market?
They haven't said it outright, but they have made interesting sort of announcements in that they are going to work with Eskom to try and bring more charging infrastructure. This is the first time I've heard it from a Chinese manufacturer, I got to say. They want to sort of roll them out in like schools, hospitals, more public areas working with Eskom. So that's going to make it more accessible to more people. So I think while they did bring a cheap car, and it's great to have cheaper EVs, it's also important for them to show some commitment, like rolling out the infrastructure. And I mean, these cars, as you know, I'm not sure whether you managed to see one in the flesh on your travels, but it's packed with all the right tech. I mean, you've got your Apple CarPlay, your Android Auto, you've got big infotainment screens, color screens. So it's a very attractive vehicle to consider, even if you've like never been into EVs.
Nafisa, what's the range like on the vehicle? I know we spoke about it being more of an in-city drive, but how far do you get on a full charge? Is it something you can kind of take as a daily commute to work and back and not really have to charge it that often? What are we talking about here in terms of some of the specs of the Dolphin Surf?
Yes, so it's 232 kilometers of range on the base model and about 295, but this all depends on your driving style. You could use your regenerative braking and gain more. If you're driving on downhills, you'll also gain more range. So I would say it's likely on the higher end one to get more than 300 kilometers. But what's also interesting is they say between 30 to 80% charge will get you 30 minutes. It will only take you 30 minutes. That's quite major. And also they are providing you with a 7-kilowatt wall box charger that you can maybe install at home or at your office. So having that with you, and even if you trickle charge, a 30-minute charge will take you to 80%. And we've covered this before, how all manufacturers say that it's recommended to charge your vehicle up to 80% because it's the quickest. And you can top up like a few times a week, if not even a few times, maybe once a week.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like you'd be able to have a lot more flexibility, especially with all the infrastructure support that BYD has been alluding to or having conversations about. So I suppose that is a good way to look at it going forward. Now, Fisa, while we are on the topic of EVs, I know that there are other EV manufacturers that have also been quite busy, the likes of Volkswagen with their ID4 Pro, the likes of BMW with their new EV plant in Hungary. How are we seeing some of the EV developments in the landscape kind of shaping not just the global market, but more specifically the South African market?
So yeah, each of these players are playing in different spaces, in a sense that BYD is going for the cheapest, BMW is still going for a more premium customer, and VW, I think they're still in limbo about what they want to do, because it's been a while now that they've been testing EVs in South Africa and they haven't really launched an EV. I think for them, price is the main thing, being the people's car, and they can't really come in with a car that's over R1 million. So I think they're still, and they've outright said they're not going to sell the car, they more want to lease it. So they're looking at different pricing structures. So it's interesting to see how each manufacturer is taking a different approach. We know one wants to offer something cheapest, and I think that's really the more important one from all. Sure, we've had premium EVs over the years for the longest time, and the new iX3 looks great, but we also need more affordable vehicles.
That we certainly do, and I suppose the businesses that would be looking at that would have their own opinions, as you rightly mentioned. Nafisa, before I let you go, where does this leave us from a South African perspective? Are we going to see more of an EV shift towards bigger EVs, or are we still very much, as a new sort of country in terms of EV adoption, looking to see what is out there in the market and perhaps what aligns better with consumer needs?
Yeah, I think the BYD's entry with the Dolphin Surf is that we are likely going to see more cheaper EVs coming in to compete, because it always takes one to come in to have that offering. However, I think we also need to keep in mind that it's not going to be an either or. It's always going to be an option for consumers. The manufacturers who've put out these dates by 2030 or 2035, they need to switch to EVs. They've all now backtracked because it's not realistic. I think just for consumers to keep in mind that you don't have to switch to an EV. If you love your petrol car, you can still drive your petrol car, but more choices are great for consumers.
More choice is never a bad thing, and consumers are now being spoiled for choice. We'll see how this shapes the EV landscape, but for now we'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks as always to our tech and EV specialist Nafisa Akabor, the founder of recharge.co.za, for joining us to take a look at the world of EVs and what seems to be ticking.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And that's the show for today, folks. If you've missed any of the conversations, they will be made available as a podcast after the show. So you can definitely go and catch up on those conversations. We're going into the final full week of the trading month of September. Markets are looking rather optimistic at the moment. I think going into this month and potentially even next month, we're going to be looking ahead to the November midterm budget policy statement, because we got that date officially confirmed by National Treasury. It is the 12th of November, and of course you know that we will bring you all of the news around that as we draw closer to that time. For now, it's coming up to 7 o'clock. Greg Coase is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. So from my side, good night.